welcome, everybody. We'll most of these stop in about an hour and have a quick toilet and tea break, so you can have some more tea and coffee then, and drink, and fruit and biscuits. And then if you're staying for the whole day, yesterday we all went out as a group for lunch, which was nice, somewhere around here. I don't know if we'll go to the same place or a different place. We went for curry yesterday. Very nice. Most important bit, the food bit. Eating is always very important. What else? And feel free to relax if you feel like lying down or moving or getting more pillows and falling asleep, that's fine. No problem with that. So I normally do a bit of an introduction and then we go into questions and answers, and sometimes we just drift in and out of silence. And even if I shut my eyes, we can still ask the question at any time. So this message is like a double-edged dagger. Either side, you're going to get stabbed. Because we're so used to living our lives and believing that we live our lives and we choose our life and we create our life and we create our happiness. We're so used to that being our mentality that we are somebody in control of our life, and it is our right to make our life happy. And it's our right to search for happiness and to get nice things. This is the mentality, particularly in the West, it's not so much in Asia, of most people, that it's my duty to get paradise in the future and to dream about this paradise that you're going to get to. And this is the most featurist bit about this message, because this idea of paradise also creates the idea of hell. Without that hoping for paradise, there won't be hell. Isn't that just so terrible? But then this is the absolute beautifulness of this message, is its absolute freedom. But whether it happens or not, whether that dream falls away or not, has got nothing to do with you. You never existed. It was an absolute illusion, the whole idea of you. And what created the suffering was this daydream of you, a daydream of you moving through time and having to choose and create happiness. But whether that dream falls away has nothing to do with you. Isn't that really incredibly sad? Your whole life, and funny as well, it's like a tragic comedy. Your whole life was never your doing. You were an added on dream for an added experience. That you was an added on thing, and it was never controlling the ship. The ship was on its way, and we all know that. We pretend it's not, but the ship was on its way, going its way, and in that a program is running, which is through thoughts and feelings and sensations and energies that's saying, okay, let's turn left now. In the left, going to the left, I hear it's paradise. It's a nice little remote island. There's no humans. There's no mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters. There's just paradise and gorgeous hunky men, all for me. And the boat doesn't turn. You're like, God damn it, turn. There's paradise over there. It's not turning. Why is it not turning? Why? What have I done? And then we begin to maybe get into spirituality and get ideas about the reason it didn't turn was because we didn't truly want it to turn. And if you truly wanted it and you truly connected to that feeling, you'd have turned the boat. But because you did, and we get into all these funky daydreams, which are an amazing experience. I mean, it's full on experiencing what highs and lows it creates. Like, yeah, I've got that. No, I haven't. It's there, no, it's me. And it creates all these highs and lows and different feelings. And it's quite an exciting ride. But at the end of the day, it does create a sense, not always, sometimes it's not always so strong, of there's always something that's missing. You're never quite a paradise. And this is always not enough. It's always just not quite there. We've always got to get there. And this dreaming. So there tends to be this feeling for the humans, particularly in Europe and America and countries where there's such a huge emphasis on this individual. There's always a feeling that you've maybe chosen wrongly and you've slightly got life wrong and that everyone else is getting life better than you or doing it more correctly than you. And there's this feeling maybe is also as if deep down there's darkness or something there, or there's something that you've got to keep at bay that's lurking. So it's quite a full-on experience being a human, especially a human that feels like it's separate. And so this message can seem really pointless because it sounds like I'm saying to you there's nothing you can do and you just have to experience what you experience and there's no way out of this whole opposite stream of hell and heaven. And in one way I am saying that, but in another way I'm also saying it was never you that was in control of any of it. You were never living your life. It's not like in any of the other situations that you had any freedom. It's just this one, this message is trying to point out more clearly that daydream. It's not that in any other situation you had more choice, or if you go and do therapy, it's you choosing to do that and making your life better. It was always just happening. Always. Every time you got it right or wrong, it was always happening. And it wasn't about you doing life. And so this message can sound incredibly negative because it's not going to give you hope that you can get there. But you never got there before. It doesn't change much. It was never you doing life. Life was always happening and you were part of that creation. You were never the creator. It can also be incredibly an incredible relief hearing this. I didn't mess up my life. I didn't do all these things. It was just something that was happening that couldn't have been any other way. And how and why that program of the individual stops is a mystery. And how and why it started in the first place is an absolute mystery. I mean, we don't even know why the tree grows. We can only describe the act of the tree growing. We don't know why the sun shines. We can only describe the act of it. The same as what's happening in the human dynamic. We don't know why. We can just describe how it functions. And maybe in describing how it functions, and that it's not a truth, there's not somebody in these bodies creating and doing and living separately, maybe that inflows, maybe not. In one way, it's never really happening. Feels like it is when it's happening. So what am I trying to say to you? Is the main things I'm trying to say is life has always just been happening. And the you that feels like it's controlling life is a happening as well. You aren't in that one that feels like it's steering the ship. That is something that's appearing in a boundless freedom that's always been there. And this boundless freedom is your nature. It's just the energy's gone solely into the controller. That dream of controlling, this tight energy of my life, where I'm going. But that's appearing in this boundlessness that's always here. This big I before I am a body and I choose. So that's one thing I'm saying. And the other thing I suppose I'm trying to point out is what you're looking for is not in the future. and it's not in any particular thing, including idea of enlightenment, including money or love or anything like that. It's not in the future. These are pleasurable and painful experiences, but that pleasure isn't what you're looking for. But hunting for pleasure is like trying to catch water in a net. It's like an endless game. Pleasure comes and goes. And what you're actually looking for isn't pleasure, but it feels like it's pleasure. It even feels like what I'm talking about, enlightenment, is a pleasure. It feels like it would be a pleasurable feeling, which it isn't. There's something here that doesn't change. So pleasure isn't it, but pleasure really feels like it. You know, when you eat the cake, the chocolate cake, or when you meet the lover, or sex and food. The car. You buy a new car. That really isn't it, but it feels incredibly nice.
Yep.
But then it will go. The car will get scratched. The lover will leave you. But the cake will make the stomach get fatter. Less lovers will want you. It's all destined to come and go, come and go, come and go. As that energy stops focusing on pleasure, and I've got to get to this pleasure, then it might be seeing this freedom that's always been here, this boundlessness, that's everything, your nature, even like saying you is maybe a little confusing, you beyond the story, is everything, it's always been everything, it's everywhere now, it's not contained, it's not suffering, it's not in the world of opposites, yet the world of opposites are appearing here. It's here, right now, it's this whole room. It's the sounds, it's everything, it's everywhere. That I, it's not separate. Separation is only arising in imagination, which has seemingly become an energetical expression of me, my life, me. So, this is why I say it's double-edged, is because as soon as you begin to listen to this message, in a way, you're screwed. Because the dream begins to get exposed. Pleasure doesn't make it anymore. You begin to see clearly that pleasure's not it. That daydreaming, like the rest of society, about the next lover or the next chocolate cake or becoming slim for the next lover or whatever it might be. I can't think of any of these pleasurable things that people are seeking for. So that begins to be exposed to not be true, and everyone knows that. It's nice a few moments getting the new car, and everyone kind of deep down knows it. It's not pleasure. So pleasure's not the high that it used to be, it's not the relief it used to be. And yet, at the same time, there's nothing you can do to get rid of yourself and stop suffering. Because you is the problem, you can't live in this, oh fuck, your head's in the lion's mouth, or the tiger's mouth. But yet, the body comes and hears it again and again. You don't know why. You don't know why the sun shines or the tree grows. It just happens. Why is another one of those things which you'll never get to the end of? It's like a hamster in a ball. It thinks it'll get to the end of whys, but it never will. It will just stop and be like, oh, I'm there. I'm still at the same place. What a crazy dream this has all been. That you've been alive for 30, 40, 50 years. You've had a whole lifetime. You've got kids or travelled the world. Had loads of different experiences. Done the tantra. Amazing sex or not. the mind's going to want to focus on how and why. And there's nothing wrong with that, and we can expose it to it. The mind gets absolutely sick of it. But it's focusing on how and why. It's focusing in that narrow energy. And right here, there's this hugeness. It's focusing in me. How do I get there? How do I get there? Where am I going to get? What's it going to be like? And it's focusing in this story, which is okay, and we seem to talk about that. And what I'm talking about is seemingly an energetic change from this contractedness to what's actually happening, this contracted small person that's looking. But each saying that can easily become a new thing. Am I expanded or am I not contracted? You can't ever know expansion, really. It's not something you can know. It's always there. In a way, you can only know the contraction, but the contraction's a lie. You can only know the bars, the fake bars. And when they're gone, you can't know that. What a great subject this is. And terrible, I understand, as well. So you can ask anything you like and expose those ideas of where you think you'll get or how you think you'll get there or what you think you are. Because there's nothing in which you are, yet there is everything. So as soon as you think you are something, it's dreaming. You can describe the habits and the conditions of the body, but the body is just one of the things that's arriving in this. And we can focus on that, but it's not who you are, the description of the body. It's one of the things that seem to appear and come and go. But so does also the light. So there's also the different appearances, the other humans. The sounds. It's funny, isn't it? Because we most probably experience light more so than we do the body. Like we see light more than we ever see the body, unless you stand in front of the mirror all day. Maybe the hands we feel. But yet we're convinced that is who we are. The body, the description of the body. We're a bad body, we're a good body. And always this image appearing of our body and who we are and what we've done. But yet when you're not thinking about the body and who you are and what you've done, there is still this beingness which isn't affected. This aliveness. even if you think some days the body's good and some days it's bad, there's still this amness that's there. And all of that's changing. And if the body suddenly is in a car crash and has no arms and legs, there's still that same amness, even though the body's completely changed and maybe it was set on fire, so it's not even recognisable. Or even if we had our parts put, I heard recently that in the future we might begin to have mechanical parts. So we might begin to get, they might begin to create mechanical livers, and I suppose they've already done that with the heart, haven't they? So even if you had most of your organs replaced with mechanics, it's still that same beingness. Even if you get that brain injury and the personality really changes, it's that same amness. This is the move that comes and goes. But yeah, the focus wants to focus in. That's who I am. How can I improve that?
This is not so much a question, it's more a report.
Yeah.
Last year when you came, I was going through a time where so much emotional pain was coming up and I was crying a lot.
Yeah.
And I experienced it as something that would come like a thunderstorm or like clouds and rain. And it was amazing for me to see that if it comes and goes and is there and I don't interfere except what it wants to do, it wants to cry, it wants to be this or that, then it goes. And I felt it was actually a big bother if I felt I had to attach a story to it. Like when I thought it's because of this I'm crying.
Yeah.
I felt it's such a bother because then my head
hurts.
Wants to make sense out of it, and it's so much simpler to just let the feelings do their business.
just like the heart does, just like the heart pumps.
Yeah.
We're not like, constantly focusing on what the heart's doing, but with feelings and with thoughts, there's constant attachment to them and what they should and shouldn't be. But you might think, and maybe it's just language, but you might think that it's you that in some way didn't attach to them or not attach to them. So you might think that you didn't put the story on there, but really the way it is something stopped arising in that. This storytelling or the attachment to those feelings is stopping arising. And this is why I always harp on about it being a loss program, is that these things, and it does seem gradual for some people, slowly crumble away, all these ideas of who you are, and feelings being so important that you're in control of them and that you've got to understand them and fix them and do something with them. But they come and go like everything.
It's easier to perceive that when one isn't attached to the story that one thinks is the reason for it.
Yeah.
These feelings.
Yeah.
And since I had both experiences, I started to mistrust these stories and not take them so serious anymore.
Yeah.
Even though I thought they were very serious.
Yeah. And true. And they're not at all.
Yeah. So now it has become more to not being attached to anything so much.
And feelings and thoughts aren't more you than anything else. We're so obsessed with our emotional state. Really obsessed with the way we feel. Like, we always ask, how are you feeling today? How are you doing today?
Mm-hmm.
And if someone says to you, how are you today? We normally reflect on our feelings or events or something. Whereas something that's coming and going, and the boundlessness is what it's appearing in.
Mm-hmm.
The freedom is what it's appearing in.
Mm-hmm. And I feel more an awareness. I say I feel because it's not, it's more in a feeling quality of being this space where it comes and goes. And when that is there, it's all so very exciting, you know.
Yeah. The reason that I speak so negatively, like I would say that it's not that you feel the space more, it's that there's less focus on the you.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I harp on like this is because, trust me, the person will get attached to its story of enlightenment. It will get attached to the idea that in some way it did this, where that boundlessness has always been your nature, and as there's the less focus on the individual, then it's not that it becomes obvious, it's the way it is. That space, that beingness has always been there. But the person will easily attach itself to that story, that you did it in some way.
Usually this whole enlightenment story becomes such a joke.
Yeah, and it also becomes a bore as well. And that's just, like, you'll find it very boring to begin to tell it. You're like, oh yeah. And then this and this and this, and to make sense of it is like trying to make sense of your feelings. They don't.
And honestly, I think I should cut my trees in my garden, prune them rather than that, you know.
Yeah, because that's what's happening. Yeah. That's it.
And it has been more while I was in India, because I had no. Here I have a few more obligations, you know, that my mind gets
focused on who you are again, yeah.
And then I get troubled and worried, and then I feel like...
And it is totally this energetic, like, focusing in on this narrow description of what the body is. That's not who you are. The description of the body is something that arises in them. The energy is so focused on it, what the feelings are, what it's doing, the right actions, where it's going, what it's being. And as that relaxes, there's this boundlessness, this freedom that's always been there. And the way I always try and put it negatively, because as soon as you talk about becoming, I think the person jumps onto that and makes another story about becoming enlightened. And we all hear, like, new speakers of about this, or young, or not necessarily young, people claiming that becoming, and it doesn't feel right when you hear it a lot of the time, because the person wants to claim onto it's become something, and it's just a reduction of all this focus on, or the falling away of this focus on this person that goes in time. Yes, that's something that's arising seemingly, the description of the body, it's something the humans have, but that's not who you are. That's something that's arriving in this boundlessness. The boundlessness is the first thing. The amness is the first thing. Always, the descriptions come and go. But as it, if it focuses too much on that, then the whole worry, the anxiety of the destiny of the body, I mean, let's get it to the point. The destiny of every body is to die. I mean, that's one thing for sure. There's no escaping it. The body dies. It's a bad ending for everybody. But it focuses on the problems, the emotions, the feelings, and then the energy gets more and more limited and stuck, and this bounded feeling comes.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you're bumping against the world, you're bumping against somebody else's opinion, you're bumping against other people rather than everything. It's calming and going, calming and going. It's like a solidness forms, this fake solidness that's never really happening.
Yeah, and this starts to become more okay.
Yeah, yeah. Even the solidness becomes, when that solidness is there, the idea of trying to change it begins to crumble, and the idea of that being bad or good begins to crumble. It's just as it is. The solidness and the person arises.
And the worst thing for these beliefs is to think they're okay. They can be there. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
It's not a problem if I feel miserable.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Then they say, but what are we here for?
Yeah.
You know, they feel like
it thinks that its purpose has always been to create a happy life, and without that, it's like, oh, or happy feelings.
Mm.
Its purpose is just for it to be happening.
Yes, it is.
I think there's no such thing as enlightenment.
There really isn't. There really isn't.
I know with most of you sound like a talk of enlightenment, but there really isn't.
Because it's your nature. It's your nature. Just what happens is there can be a crumbling of this energy that dreams that there's a problem and dreams that it's going somewhere and collapsing of that. But it was always boundlessness. It was always freedom.
To me, I experience it in a way that before I had strife or whatever, I have to go to Tony, I have to come to you, and And meanwhile, I experience it differently. It's more like even what you are saying seems to be like a concept, it's just arising.
Yeah.
And it's no difference whether I sit here, listen to you, or paint a picture, or kiss my husband, or whatever.
Yeah, it really isn't. It's so dire for the speaker, because in a way you have to absolutely destroy yourself and make it so, because it really is no different. It's all just appearances coming and going. Before, maybe there was an energy that was, there were some appearances that were more important that I've got to make stay. There's appearances which are more pleasurable, but pleasure comes and goes.
My memory becomes really bad.
Yeah.
We are kidding each other with Alzheimer. And my experience of time is changing. Before it was more linear, is this the right word?
Yeah, I think so.
And now it's more like,
you can't really grasp it, it's a weird thing to think of.
It's, I don't know. It's not linear anymore. And sometimes it feels like, as I haven't been even born. I wasn't even born.
Yeah.
Is this right to say? I don't know how to say it in English.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Of course, because you weren't. Ultimately, in this moment, it was only the body that was born, and when that fixation stops, then it didn't start or stop. And the reason that the memory gets bad is because you're not repeating the story of who you are all the time. There's not that repetition going on. This is who I am, this is where I'm going, this is what I'm doing. So when that begins to crumble, then the appearances are coming and going, and there's not this repetition.
But it's really bad.
It's really bad. Okay, maybe you've got Alzheimer's.
And the memories of me being young or how I look differently, it's all gone.
It's disappearing, yeah.
And the experience of time is totally changed, as if there is no time.
And you might notice that when you stop being around your husband that you might be for many years, you can't remember really who he is.
I go into my friends in the south, and I'm there, and it's like, I'm sorry, I have to say that, he's not even there.
He's gone.
When I come home, it's like, we call it Fremden, kind of in a more English language.
Foreigner.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, it really took me a few days how I to approach him, because I feel like, oh my God, you know.
That is so different from what we expect of enlightenment. We expect of being bliss.
Dun dun dun, I know everything.
I have so many ideas or hopes about achieving something. And meanwhile, I realize, well, there's nothing to achieve, you know. But I was standing at a fuel station, like 2 years ago or something, and there was this
huge yellow M like McDonald's. And I looked up in the stars and up, there's no such thing as enlightenment. And I was laughing 3 weeks because it was so funny. And it was very relaxing.
Yeah.
But before, when it started to arise that even what you or Tony or Richard Sylvester are saying is just a concept, also just a concept, it would freak me out for quite a while because this was the only thing where I would feel that I could hold on, you know? Yeah. And then it fell away.
Yeah. And you stop seeing that concept and that person as higher. Yeah. And that feels like the last thing, like you've got to have some reverence for something. Like something's got to be higher. I mean, just keep it as non-duality.
And it felt like as if I had nothing to hold on anymore.
Yeah. Still on all this.
Yeah, it's full on.
There's nothing to hold on to. What? I mean, what could possibly be it?
It's getting harder to make plans or to arrange appointments. Or even yesterday, we felt like, oh, we're going to Visa and something different happened. Do you have the same with appointments and plans or something?
Well, sometimes it works.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't. I'm being as to the planning, but it's maybe still very bad compared to most people, but I'm getting better at doing it. I'm booked up now for October. Flight, hotel.
I don't want to make plans because it feels so tight.
Yeah. But anything that you think about anything isn't true, so the idea that planning can restrict anything. You might be a real flop in society, like you plan something and then you're like, oh, sorry, I'll do this at the last moment. But the idea that that's got tightness in it, planning, it's just an idea. There's no tightness anywhere. The mind will try and look at any little thing. They can't. They can't find it. The only thing is what's happening.
May I say something?
Yeah.
But even once in a while, she's that even the idea that the Earth is a planet is to me just an idea.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's freaking out, but sometimes it's like, oh my god. yeah.
It's funny that that one would freak you out more so than some of the others. But we all have our little
some bigger, some small.
Yeah.
How does it go together, this just what's happening?
Yeah.
Without my interpretation, and then nothing ever happens, actually, or really happens.
Yeah. Well, really you can't put the nothing ever happens into words. Mm. But there is two sides to it. There's what's happening, which seemingly is this. And then we can describe it in words, but ultimately this doesn't belong in words. This is as it is.
then there's this other side where there's nothing happening, where this amness, which is everything, is absolutely empty. It doesn't start or stop anywhere. This absolute void. The void side, though, the person has been, or that energy of focusing in on that narrow person has been covering up. There is this absolute emptiness here. You will always catch me out on my words, because I really can't put it into words. It's funny because you get different personalities that talk about this, and you get some that will stick by their words and fight for those words when they talk about this. Whereas I collapse really quickly, and someone says, well, that's a bit of a contradiction. I'm like, yeah, yeah. It's good either way, because when somebody sticks to, like, this is it, or a concept, then what happens with the questioner is they keep fighting it until they begin to crumble their concept, because that's all it is. It's not that the new concept's correct in any way, it's just the old concept collapses. And then also the way that I tend to be, people will look at it and be like, it sometimes gives the feeling for people maybe, oh yeah, it really doesn't matter. Yeah.
Can you repeat the whole answer?
Oh gosh, no.
Trick question.
Was it about the emptiness there?
I got stuck with that word and then I lost it. So, you've asked something with the... Something is happening and on the other side nothing is happening. No?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you said how does there's something happening but there's nothing happening. Well, there seems to be this happening, right? There seems to be, if we put it into words, which ultimately this isn't words, this isn't a room. Rooms are obviously in German, this isn't a room. This is I don't know what it is in German.
Hum.
That means nothing to me. So it's not those words, but we've put words onto it. So there's this, which if we narrow it in words, we say rooms, humans, da da da, chairs and so on, and light. So there's this. And then there's this other side, which I really, it's easier to talk about this than it is to talk about the other side, but there's this other side where nothing's ever happened. You know when you're dreaming at night, it really feels like that dream's happened, but it's also not happening at the same time. Like after it's gone, the dream is gone, you can't contain it and hold on to it and put it in a bag, it's really not happening. It's a whole imaginary land. I'm not quite saying that this is imagination, but I'm trying to point to this other side that's empty. We sometimes fear this side, so we kind of cover it up and don't like to think about it. And reminds us of death and dying. Sometimes if you're an artist, you can maybe get into this a bit more, like by saying that there's sound happening now and there's also not sound happening, or there's sight happening and there's also not sight happening. Everything I say is really abstract because we're using these very limited words that we all have different association of meaning to. So everybody's association of meaning is... This is a dog, it's like... You can't see a piece of it, but looking out of the room.
Oh.
Everybody's meaning of what's being said is different, so it means that there's no ultimate way to say this. There's no way you can put this into words. So this is more about a sense of what's being talked about, like when you look at an artwork or listening to music, it's more of knowing of what's being talked about or a sense of what's being talked about rather than the meaning behind these words. Having said that, maybe we'll have a short break now. I can't make it through 2 hours without the toilet. And she's on season. I don't know if that, you know what that means. It's when the dog is ready to have babies. And this boy dog, she went up to this boy dog really flirting, and the boy dog had a sniff. And normally the boy dogs just want to straightaway jump on the woman, and they chase her and everything. And the boy just kind of sniffed her and then ran off. And you can see she's she had trotted after him. That was so funny.
Yeah, so deeply touching this, which you said there's no hunting, or it is the hunting of the pleasure. I want to have the pleasure, I want to feel good, I don't want to feel bad.
Yeah.
And if this is not just a dream behind this, it feels very empty.
Yeah, and it is empty.
I know, but it's so hard to take.
Yeah, it is empty, and this is scary for that person with meaning. But it's the meaning side of it that it's afraid of, because it's used to associating this to having meaning, but meaning only ever came with language. This is meaning and this is purpose. And if that dissolves, then this is very empty, and we normally associate that with depression, but it's not depressive. Mm. There's a great freedom in the lack of meaning. But the meaning is what's made me so uncomfortable. This means that they don't like me. This means that it's not good. This means I could have had better. When that falls away, it's just as it is, appearing and disappearing.
I think in English it's clear, it says, meaning is mean.
Yeah, that's a good one. Never thought of that. Meaning is mean. And we're scared of this emptiness because in a way, a huge part dies in this emptiness. Yeah.
I think it's all about to accept this emptiness. I mean, because then there's nothing.
Yeah,
then you are happy. I mean, if you are hunting, then you don't need to hunt any longer. Because you just are what you are, so.
I always say the negative, like it's the end of that one that's resisting the emptiness, but I really get when people are saying it's a positive way of accepting. It's not wrong in any preferred way of speaking. It's kind of accepting death in a way, that emptiness, or not resisting death anymore. This could be it. No more. What if this was no more? There was no more. I'm sorry, this is a hard one because you've just had a child as well. No more husband and child. This is it. And we always are scared of that part of this existence, that it could just be over. It could just be the final goodbye. But it's okay, that there's nothing to be scared of. It feels very scary, though, the losing of these objects. We've been taught for so many years, it seems, or the body's been conditioned for so many years to hold on to everything. Hold on to it. I've got to make this permanent. I've got to make myself happy. And it's such a relief when that loosens. And it's just appearing and disappearing. And it's really cool the way it appears. It's also really beautiful because we're so in love with the movement. We're so in love with the fact that everything's moving and changing. I mean, look at the beauty, the sunset, the flowers growing. It's so beautiful that everything's changing. But in that also means everything's being lost as well. We love change. We love movement. We're in love with the fact that you see the tree grow and blossom and the child grow. But also in the fact that everything's moving, it also means everything's dying and being lost. We like that side. The change, we love that side, but we don't want to face that side. Everything is going to die. Everything. And with that, with that realization or with that relaxing of that one that's trying to hold on to it, then that emptiness is everywhere and not something to be frightened of. It's only fearful when you're trying to hold on to those moving forms. It's cruel and beautiful. Everything rots and turns into something else, but that's also incredibly beautiful. You'll never hold on to pleasure. But we condition, and particularly these more Western or, I don't know, these, it's not necessarily Western, but more evolved society, we're so focused on the individual and telling the story of creating and controlling your own life and your life. We're really focused on your life. Whose life? You didn't need your life when you were 2 or 3 years old and just running in the playing outside.
I have a question about this. In one of your last talks I was listening to, I think you mentioned that someone had said in times of war there were less neurotic people because everyone's concentrating on surviving. Well, do you think, since then I've been wondering, is peace, are times of peace times where people mainly are concerned with themselves? And could that mean that, on the other hand, being at war and concentrating on survival is
not bad.
It's a, maybe a necessary part.
This is my reflection of travelling so much,
yeah.
Is that the most unhappy societies are the most peaceful societies. I'm not saying actually that we are a peaceful society. I'm not really sure what we are in the West, but we certainly have it as people living in the West, a more comfortable, financially comfortable situation than, say, in India or more poorer countries. And they, but people do tend to be more unhappy. Isn't that weird?
So what is that?
Yeah, and when they're concentrating on surviving, or just surviving, this individual self isn't growing so much, and this dilemma and this worry around what you choose to do isn't so strong. It's just more reactions are happening. Whereas what tends to happen for Westerners, and it's crazy, is we go mad contemplating choice. And they're normally not so big a choices because they're not, in England particularly, we have a whole benefit system, so you don't really have too many homeless people. There's not, you really can't fuck up your life so much that you're starving and starve to death on the street. It's quite a comfortable for most people in England, but then they lay awake at night worrying about what they've chosen, what they've said to their friends, who likes them. They've kind of gone crazy thinking. It's weird, isn't it? And then you go to Asia where life isn't so comfortable, and because they haven't got this time to reflect on themselves, they're just doing, just being, they're not suffering so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really weird that that should happen. That seems incredibly cruel life. But then what is happening in more Western countries is this message seems to be growing. Like, for sure, my numbers, when I look on their website, from year to year are growing, and when I look at other speakers, they seem to be growing as well. There seems to be more speakers evolving. So that's kind of a weird thing that's happening. But we can't make conclusions. I'm sure some speakers make conclusions. Yes, we're going to have a new earth, a new society. We don't know what's happening.
I think as long as the eye doesn't dissolve, in war or in a poverty, and when a poor person in India gets rich all of a sudden, maybe he starts to fear to get poor again because the eye hasn't dissolved. Or in war, after a while, many of these people are not enlightened or they are traumatized.
Yeah,
and it gets the trauma generation for generation further. So
I don't really know.
Yeah.
This taxi driver that I became friends with this time in India, if he were to be given loads of money, his thinking is very simplistic. I don't think it would be, even if he was given loads of money, I don't think it would be as bad as suffering as maybe Westerners, but because his thinking's not got very complicated. He's very simple about things. So maybe that illusion of getting the money keeps him simplistic if he got the money.
I've heard a story of an ex-US soldier who was in Vietnam, and he said the greatest freedom was when the bombs were falling and the bodies were exploding around him, and it's really cruel. And after this, he had no more freedom.
Mm.
That's really cruel. Peace in the middle of war.
Yeah. And it's great, these kind of experiences, because it really implodes any idea of what we think we need. I always think this is a weird thing, and this is just my personal thoughts. I always think it's a bit sad that we've had the fact that we have to kill our food taken away from us. Like, I just feel, because it makes death such a removed thing rather than a very everyday. Like, in order for this body to survive, we're so out of touch with that. We have to kill an animal to eat. Some of us try to live off plants, but even killing plants kills loads of animals. When you actually do it, you kill loads of insects to mice and lots of animals. I mean, we're so removed from it. We have to kill this, not a dog. We tend not to eat dogs. We tend to just leave it to the pigs and the...
Oh, well, maybe later.
Yeah. This is better. Yeah, it's a nice lumpy one.
And we're so removed from that. We buy it packaged. And India, it was like, I was at the orphanage, and they have pigs. There's these beautiful pigs. I like pigs. And they also eat their pigs in the orphanage. They try to teach the girls to like I was saying, in the orphanage for a while, they try to teach the girls to understand the environment, so they have to garden, and then they also have to look after pigs, and then they slaughter the pigs and eat the pigs. And it, to us, we feel that's really brutal when you actually see your animal, but it was this sweetness in a way to it. Like, they were so happy, they loved this pig, and they loved eating this pig as well. To us, we're like, oh, hang on. I'm not sure we should be loving and eating our pig. But they were like, yes, it tastes very good, and they were so proud of this pig, and looking forward to eating it as well.
So you think it's just the thought that, for example, we shouldn't be vegetarian because we should be vegetarian and not eat animals because that's something bad because we have to kill something to
survive. Yeah, that's a thought. That's a realistic thing. The human is a... Some human bodies are less meat eaters, but the human body, I mean, scientifically, they're not sure actually what we are. Some say we're meat eaters, some say we're vegetarian. My body tends to be more vegetarian and doesn't like the taste of meat. But yeah, that's a story. It's not uncompassionate, because eating the vegetable kills loads of animals.
And the vegetable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a meat person. I absolutely admit it. I know all the... my body is not happy with vegetarian food only. And I've been occupying myself a lot with nutrition and these things and how they work, and everyone's of a different opinion. But at the moment, there's so many people who are trying to blame others for eating meat still, and who think that the whole world is going to change and peace is coming about if we start or stop eating animals, because that's where it all starts, basically. That's where murder begins, and that's why we can't fear peace. And I've been wondering, of course,
the opposite. I think brutality is what makes us less peaceful in a way, because we fear it so much. Death is death. It's not as bad as we think it is. But having said that, because we hide away killing animals, we tend to be really horrible to the animals. Like mass factories, not a nice thing.
No.
If you were killing your own animal, it would be, have a lot better life, I'm sure. If you were more in touch with it. And then psychologically, I think it really screws up those people that have to mass kill animals. It's mass killing animals, I don't think is a particularly pleasant thing to be around.
No, I think no one really thinks that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's just this basic... Then you have discussions with the German vegetarian people, and it tends to get very, very aggressive, really.
A lot of vegetarians are vegetarians because they're really scared of death, and they're really scared of the reality of what it is. For these bodies to survive, other things have to be destroyed. That's that. That's mean. But it's also beautiful. We love movement, and it's really sad movement. Movement means other things have to be destroyed. It's so great, non-duality, because all morality gets lost. All these false ideas.
And it's not our choice anyway. No. It's not your choice to eat meat.
That's just because I'm having all these discussions with my sister. Very, very... very vegan.
Very, very...
Vegan.
She's
vegan.
Vegan,
yeah. Vegan, also. Vegan.
Yeah,
she's very... she's trying to...
If you push her, she'll begin to display hate about it. I'm sure most of them do.
Sorry, who's this
guy? If you push your sister, she'll begin to display hate and rage about it. So she's screaming peace. Pushing peace with hate.
Yeah, she is. And it sometimes it really freaks me out. It freaks me out when
I'm... Because it's coming from a place of fear most of the time. It's coming from a place of fear of death. So she wants to believe that she can be in a place where she's not creating death. It's impossible.
That really helps me understand.
It's just fear of her own physical death, really.
A long time ago, I was in a training to be a heilpraktiker, and at some point we had to give talks about things we people were kind of against, like a person who was a flamboyant non-smoker had to talk about the benefits of smoking. A vegetarian had to talk, about what is the good side of eating meat. A woman who happened to have a she had to be an Avon lady and bring up to us. Because this woman who was the leader of that school said, if you are a high practitioner, you must be open to all possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So. And then she must make a talk, I must not be open. Weeks ago about bird flow against my window here, and I could hear that it didn't sound pretty well. It was like broken neck, and it was lying there in front of the window, and I was watching, and I was always, as a child, watching insects which were dying, or I was so fascinated about death. What is going on when something or somebody dies? What is the difference between a living and a dead body?
Yes.
And this time again, I was watching the bird and it didn't move, and I was, it's like childish to expect how it will move in a second. But I know it won't. And I was again like, where did this bird or the energy or what was it? Where did it go? So. And then I was sitting with my husband for lunch, and I was telling him about and asking these questions. And then it was like, there's no difference. It's just this form doesn't function anymore.
Yeah.
But the inside or whatever it is, the energy is not different at all. It's the same.
It's not moving.
No, it's just the same.
Yeah.
And it was like a really big aha.
Yeah.
And it's so easy.
Yeah. There's nothing in the bird in the first place. It's easy to reject entities into something that's moving. But everything's moving. If you speed up a tree, it moves. But we don't project entity into it because it's not moving quick enough.
Yeah. There's no entity.
And it's so weird because in a different place, maybe then the bird would be dead and then you eat it. It's really gruesome, this place, but it's like, a dog would have loved to have eaten that.
And there's another story. I saw a dog who was jumping off the, on top court back there, the building, and he was jumping off the building. I didn't see that. I saw just the dog sitting there and bleeding out of the nose, and there was this woman, the owner, I guess, and we were walking by, and I saw the dog bleeding, and he was really quiet. He was like, what a dog does, like looking around, bleeding, and he didn't say, oh, it's so bad, what happened to me, and this scene, it touched me so much.
Yeah.
I didn't feel so sorry about him, but I was so touched by this, not yaman, how do you say?
Complaining.
Complaining, yes, and feeling bad, you know,
just as it was.
Yeah.
Bleeding pain, intense pain.
Yeah, I was crying of this, being touched by this.
And it's only the humans that suffer. It really, when this begins to become so obvious, it's only the humans that suffer that have that dreamt idea that it's happening to them. And it shouldn't be done, and then it begins to become so uncomfortable because it's just intense pain, and that's it, and blood, and just different sensation.
And even this is we have no choice about complaining.
No.
Even this is the game, and this is so hard to accept,
yes.
That you cannot choose.
or choose to accept or not accept. There's complaining happening or not happening. Or taking it personally or not taking it personally.
But the good thing is it only happens as long as it happens. But then on top of it we have the choice to make it last.
Well, do we? Who's the you that has the choice? It seems like there might be somebody in there debating that.
Okay. You got me there.
Choice is a killer, humans. It's a killer. Go with them. Mine will go around forever with that idea of choice. And it keeps the energy limited to me. Choice.
Choice plus responsibility.
Yeah.
That follows.
Yeah. Oh, I did the wrong time. And it stays in this mental contracted reality of what I've done. Whereas in the war zone, in the having to sort the animal, there's just what's happening. There's absolute this. Whereas when the person that's maybe got more time, it's not necessarily time, but that person that thinks that it has control over anything, it will spend hours debating, should I, shouldn't I, what the consequences, what have I done? Morality, where it comes into good and bad.
I think in war, when bodies explode and you're in the middle of whatever, and you feel this absolute helplessness, this is peace, because you cannot do anything.
Yeah. It's just happening.
Yeah. It's like in an accident.
Yeah.
Just watch.
In German, it's the same word, choice and election.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because you choose and mark an X. But in elections, you can also notice that you're supposed to choose. You go and do your duty, so to speak, and afterwards they do what they want. So your choice was good for nothing. And it takes every 4 years, I mean, in my life, every day I choose, I think. But then whoever does what they want anyway. You know, I do what I want anyway.
It may be easier in war times because you've got nothing to lose and be very happy with just to be, while you being in a...
You've got knock up to look after 30 years of your life in the future.
No, you're just happy to
worry
be.
About 30 years of time. My war games.
And we have these goals to reach, these aims.
It might be death the next moment, but it's just coming back to what's actually happening, which has always been the way of it. It's always just being what's happening. That was always enough. But how to stop that entity which is taking it personally and constantly focusing on what to do, where to go, is quite mysterious, because anything that we suggest just adds to that energy of it's my choice. It's my, I've got to get somewhere.
Lisa?
Yeah?
Do you believe in the concept of the soul?
Of what, sorry?
Of the soul.
It depends how you use the word. In England, soul tends to mean like that each body has a separate soul from everything else. Like, so each body's acting independently, and then this soul is judged by something external to it and then can progress to the life after death or something. But that's what I tend to think. If you were to say that soul was everything, then I wouldn't have a problem with that word, like everything is soul, but not of a separate entity.
And this is your concept?
What did you mean by soul?
Hmm. being a part of everything, but with a proper, well, not identity, but proper, not even delicious, but proper love. I don't know how to say it, but yeah. Because I'm still wondering about this question of the choose, what to choose things, and the responsibility with it.
Yeah.
Because even if you make some decision, and even if you take it as something that is just happening, and you're going to destroy the whole humanity with the decision by one, could be, no?
They could be pressing a button with a nuclear bomb.
Exactly. You're the one, you know. You just do it because this is the way it is.
Yeah.
But I think then something, even in, I don't know, like an addiction in the memory of the whole thing, you know, that everybody has, because it's part of everything. Like, I don't know, like the wisdom, or the...
Wisdom?
Wisdom. Or the knowledge of what you have done is like captured, oh, isn't it?
Not if you have Alzheimer's.
Okay, but in case of not.
Or very young kids have very poor memories.
Do you think so?
Tend to not have that
great. I think they're changing. I mean, I don't know, I have a kid and she's remembering things from her second life year. And I'm just wondering, how can you just remember?
So back. See, I forgot what you said before that. Like you were saying about the responsibility of pressing the button.
Exactly.
And your choice. The problem, the thing about choices is the body is always making choices. So choice is a word. I see choice as a word that describes what the body does. So the body chooses to pick up a glass, or the dog chooses to lick the other dog's bum, or whatever it chooses. So we use that word to describe what the body does. But what's happened with the human is they've claimed that choice to be a separate entity that's acting independently of everything. But you can look at choice for two things, and this is a huge thing of what I'm talking about, this choice dynamic, is you can look at choice in the flow of things. Can you ever separate a choice out from a previous action? If you can't separate out from a previous action, there's nobody independently choosing in that moment. Then also you can look at choice in this moment of how you choose. How is it that you're choosing in each moment? And I know it sounds really... It sounds like most people don't want to contemplate the choice thing, but when that begins to get challenged, it's the freedom that comes with that, because so much hate and judgment is based on choice, what the other person's chosen to do me. So much of this contractive energy is about choice, what my partner chose to do, what my kid chose to do. I met this amazing lady who had three kids. One of the kids was autistic, really quite severely autistic. It was most probably going to have to go to a home because as it grew, she couldn't control it. It didn't have any really reflection about actions or anything. It was quite out of control, the kid. And then two other kids that were going to school and doing the regular thing. She never, ever complained about the autistic kid, but she would often complain about the other two kids. And I asked her one day, why are you not complaining about the autistic kid? Obviously, that's the one that creates the most pain in the flow of things in life. But yet you never complain about your autistic kid, you complain about the other two. And she said, and eventually after reflecting on it, she said, well, actually, I don't perceive my autistic child of having any choice to be any different, so therefore I don't think about it. It's quite amazing and quite profound that. So she was only suffering because she projected choice onto the other kid. They could have chosen differently. What are they going to choose to do? Why are they choosing to do that? But her, in her actual day-to-day, the kid that was most painful was actually the autistic kid, but she never gave it a second thought. It was just happening. She just dealt with it. She didn't spend hours contemplating, why did he do this to me? Why did he speak to me like this? Why did he treat me like this? It's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Choice put so much attention on this narrow, fake entity. There's no one actually there that's ever chosen anything. How can you, in both ways, in the moment, we can't find the entity in which is choosing. A choice appears, or thoughts appear that say, I'm going to choose to eat an apple now, and another thought says, no, no, don't eat the apple, and then another one says, yes, I'm going to eat an apple, and then the apple's eaten. We can't find the entity that's behind those choices. We can only find an entity in those choices. We can't find the person that's creating those thoughts. Those thoughts appear from a vast emptiness. The only place that we can find the person is in whether or not the debate of whether you should choose the apple or not. So we can't even find the you that's choosing. We can just see the appearances of choice. And then in the other way of things, from the flow of things, we can't take out actions. So say if she now was to lick or to go up to the other dog, at what point did that action start? So that's not a very good one, but say now if she was to lick your hand, like at what point does that, the hand needs to be there, the body needs to be there, she needs to have moved to that position, this body needs to have come to this position. Where can you define choice starting? When your parents met and made love? Choice, but so much energy goes into that. So much thinking and suffering goes into this idea that you choose. But is this a reality? Do you choose? And if so, who are you that chooses? Guilt goes, blame goes, so much goes when this gets challenged. But most entities don't want to challenge this because that's where they live in. I am choosing. Who is choosing? The I is only found in the description of the chooser. I am a body that chooses. Who? How does the body choose? We don't claim the heart beating. We don't claim digestion. We don't claim the feelings, the arthritis or a headache. But yet we claim the choice. Even though it takes 100 other actions for that choice to happen, we claim choice, whether we did a good or bad choice, whether we were guilty or, what's the opposite to guilty? Praised. We've done a good action. And all our suffering comes from that projection on the other. So relationship suffering is often about what the other chose to do to you. Who? When this relaxes, this choice dynamic, then this change in energy can happen where it's contracted me that's choosing separate from everything else to seeing that everything is one movement happening. And you are that movement, but as aliveness, not as a contracted person. It's really scary this as well though, because if you don't choose, the other doesn't choose, and then who can you blame for doing something to you and hold guilty?
And could I choose to stop choosing?
Sorry? And couldn't, yeah. And
could I choose to stop choosing? Choosing?
Yeah,
could, but how?
How?
Consciously?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible. You couldn't. It just either stops arising, that dynamic.
Yeah.
And we don't know why it stops arising. It might be coming and hearing this, it stops arising, or it might be that an experience happens like the experience you described yesterday. Something happens where it's like, I don't have any choice. We don't know why it stops arising. And it might, even though hearing this message, it might carry on, so the partner does think, and you're like, ah! So much suffering with the partner over choice, with the parents over choice, what they chose to do to me. Who are you imagining yourself to be, and who are they? When you fall away, they fall away. There's nobody in the bodies. There's just it happening. And then everybody who's seen like the autistic child at the beginning of the story, they're like, yeah, it was amazing. It really shook this baby when she realised that. Oh, yeah. They don't see it could be any different. Yeah. It's just as it is.
Might ago, this memory came back to me that was not really forgotten, but not remembered either. How as a child all of a sudden I identified with I am I.
Yeah.
And it was, I must have said I before, but it wasn't an exclusion. It was just like a reference. It was not like this kind of prison it became.
Yeah.
It was, when this happened, it was both exhilarating because all of a sudden I had a point. Oh, this is where I am. Wow, this is my place. This is from where I can see the world. It's like on top of a mountain in a little bit, but at the same time, it was a pain.
Yeah.
Because it was a prison in the same moment. Like, whoa, but then I'm only here and I'm... And as a child, I didn't have such clear ideas about it. But I remember how these feelings were there, and when this memory came, I could understand more clearly, or could more see the ramifications.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking what kind of a day this would be if one would say, today is my choosing day. And all I do, I'm going to choose. I choose to have coffee now. I choose to stir the spoon.
But this is a true, accurate description of what the body does. Like, I don't mean to... It's just that when that choice is personalised, that the body does... That's how we use language. I choose to pick up... You meet people in non-duality who then try to exclude the word choice, and then it becomes incredibly funny. That's a description of what the body's doing. Choosing to... go outside now. That's a very accurate description. But there's nobody there doing that choice. It's a choice is just appearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about denying choice. Choice is it. It's just that no one is there choosing separately. Choice is part of the flow of things.
Well, it's like in this experience, then if you choose like that, you become separate. The moment you think you choose, you separate yourself.
It's not the body, it's that energy that's claiming it. Mm-hmm. Like, choice is happening in the sense of, not all the time, like that's just happening, the moving of the finger. But when you go up there, they'll be looking at the tangerine, the orange, and the cookie. And then there might be thoughts, we get healthy, and then a choice is made, and it's not that that's going to stop. That is a description of what's happening. But there's no one behind that that's made the choice. There's no one there that's guilty or good or bad. It's just appearing.
So there was no Hitler inside Hitler.
No.
What a really always more than Hitler. So.
You have to bring up Hitler and
John. Yeah.
There was a picture of Hitler the other day in a pink uniform. With a pink heart. And it looked so hilarious.
Peter was telling me that Hitler was a vegetarian as well.
Yeah.
Always be careful of the peaceful ones.
He's not at all.
He liked dogs as well.
And he came from Bavaria.
Same thing. That's what I was thinking before. You know, in a case like Hitler. Someone is just making decisions, doing stuff.
Yeah.
Out of doing.
Yeah.
If we see it like this. And I don't know. When he's dying, I mean, if there must be something in his memory to have learned out of this situation, and this is something that maybe go into his,
not his memory,
the entire memory of, the soul, everybody.
There might be another body-mind mechanism that lives with that memory that appears, but it's not a separate entity. Like Buddhism, it's, they have lots of different views, but the Buddhism that I study, they used to call it rebirth. So the energy of that memory can carry on. But it's not. There's not a separate entity that holds that memory. Just like everything else, just like a plant grows with the what do you call it, DNA or the genetics of the last parents, but it doesn't mean that there's an entity which is claiming that inside the plant, saying, yes, I'm the one that was, I have the same genetics and DNA.
I know, this is not what I mean. It's just the fact that at the end of life,
yeah,
someone comes to the conclusion, I mean,
yeah, that's
what they say, and then you see everything like, you know, yeah, it was all an illusion,
yeah,
and I don't know, you have to learn something. And then it's just like, oh, okay, well, yeah.
No, there's just nothing to learn. That's just an idea that the mind wants to hold on to make point of it, to make sense of it. There's no sense to this. It's nice, the idea that we can learn something from this. What could we possibly learn? You'll go around wherever trying to find it.
I mean, we can learn out of it, not to, I don't know.
To what?
Make a peaceful world.
Not to hunt other humans, you know? I mean,
to hunt animals instead.
No,
You'll have to carry on looking until you're satisfied with the answer. That's the way that it works. That person will have to look, but you'll never find a place of peace. This world is opposites. It's birth and destruction. And it's really sad, some of the things that go on, that, I mean, we've never experienced it, I doubt anyone here, but it's only in our imagination that millions of people were killed. For some idea, but you'll never find this place of learning, this thing that you want to learn at the end of your life, you'll never find. It will just be a game that the mind will carry on thinking about, but that's really scary, because that also means that this is all pointless. And that person feels that's impossible to accept, that this is pointless. But there's so much freedom in pointlessness. I promise you, what you're looking for is no meaning. The mean is meaning.
Yeah.
Full on stuff. But all our films and so much of our conditioning is about this. You know, you get to the end of the film and there's a purpose and there's a meaning. And people would say, I was recently watching, this is so, I have such a bit of a sick humour now. I was watching, have you seen the film Gravity?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good film.
Oh, yeah.
And like, she really fought to stay alive. And like, towards the end, I was like, come on, just die. And you feel the audience, like, the audience are wanting to laugh and to live. And I was like, no, come on, this is so unrealistic. Everything dies, just die, for God's sake. And I was kind of disappointed when she got up and lived. I was like, no. We're such romanticists. We want this perfect, like, and now she's got meaning to live because she nearly died. There's no point.
She gets eaten on Earth then, because she landed in the jungle somewhere.
I wanted that to happen. I was like, now the big animal. Oh, she's like, there's this really romantic song out about, it's just such a great movie, but it's a short video. It's this romantic film song about these two people finding endless love. It was so sweet. They find each other and they get away from all the gangsters. I might have posted it on one website, so you might have seen it from me. And they finally get away from all the gangsters and they walk off into the sunlight, and then just as you see them disappearing, a bus comes and you go through this whole emotion of like, yeah! And a lot of I've realized that humor's coming out like this more. Like our comedians are beginning to reflect this back. We've gone through this period now as humanity of looking for this peaceful ending, and now we're beginning to ask, fuck it, what peaceful ending is that? And so the human, the art and the comedians and everything will reflect this back.
There was this movie of Rwanda, the killing of Rwanda, Hotel Rwanda.
Oh, yeah.
And it was such a horror. All the movie, they were trying to escape and to survive and try to stay alive, and it was such a stress. And then there was this way, and all these corpses like lying there, and it was such a peaceful picture. Like I said,
yeah,
if I would be there, please kill me, do it quick.
Yeah.
But I just want to have peace.
Yeah.
The horror is the trying to control, trying to survive, trying to escape. This is the horror. The fear is the horror.
Yeah.
Not the
death.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that film. My friend actually was acting in it. He was one of the main guys. And I remember he sent it to me and I watched it and it was like one of those films.
Contraction poor.
Oh yes, yes.
You know, I was looking at your clock, so I thought I can't ask this question anymore.
Yes, later. You have to come back this afternoon.
Yeah, I will.